Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by a woman, Poe.
Hello.
Poe, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, Poe, you are, as covered, a woman, and you cover women's things on your channel, Poe's Law, is it? Or
it's been renamed recently to Poe's Law, but a lot of people know me as Poe the Person.
Poe the Person. And you're active on X as well, under Poe as well. What's the channel about? What's the theme?
Well, I started off my channel talking about all things intellectual dark web, freedom of speech, economics, basically anything that I find interesting. It's sort of moderately heterodox. But since I've had children and since I've sort of teamed up with a bunch of other women, we do cover more women's issues, sort of talking about family structure, relationships in a kind of post-feminist context, having conversations about what, you know, now that we're comfortable with moralizing, what is the correct way to live your life, and how can we do that in a modern context?
So not big on the feminism thing then?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Right, very good, very good. Now, children. That whenever you sort of take on a woman, that often comes along as well. Jolly expensive. They used to be very popular once upon a time when they actually provided some sort of economic benefit. These days, we seem to be going through a bit of a fertility crisis across the Western world. You've got countries like South Korea that are at the point now where their sort of economics are, their demographics are sort of baked in years ahead. They're not going to have enough people in the late 2040s just to look after the old people, let alone do everything else. Happening right across the Western world, what is going on? Why are we abandoning children?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think it's not hard when you take it down to the individual level and look at one, let's say, 25-year-old woman. She's at her peak fertility. She's got lots of energy. She probably has a man in her life who is ready to commit to her. Maybe not until she's 30 or something. But typically, if you have someone who's on paper set up to have children, why are they not doing it? It is kind of a mystery. Lots of people have their ideas. You know, it's cost of living, it's housing cost. You know, it's
each of those feels like quite strong in their own, don't they? Each argument by itself feels quite strong. So, I mean, the way I look at it is that all aspects of being old are subsidised. So your pension is subsidised. The NHS, which the older people are a significant draw on, is subsidised, as well as all the other subsidies, you know, bus subsidies and whatever else you get with it. But being a young person goes completely the other way. You know, you are the sort of the burden. You are the tax receptacle, and it hardly seems unlikely that when you're extracting money from these people, couple that with a debt thing, that you basically now must have two people earning a wage in order to even get a home. It sort of feels like that's a pretty convincing argument.
It very well could be economic. But I think we've seen some statistical breakdowns that suggest that, you know, we're not seeing wealthy women having loads of children, right?
Yes,
like
they, that's true.
Like some of them do. Like religious fundamentalists, I should say. There's people who choose to have lots of children. Some of them are very poor. You know, they just sort of have them by accident. Some of them are religious and they don't believe in birth control. Some of them are rich and they can just afford to have them and they really like having them. But I think there is something sort of more deep and spiritual that we as a culture don't really like children. We kind of get started later than our parents or grandparents did. We kind of put it off because we want to enjoy life to its fullest before being shackled to an infant who ties you out and spends all your money.
Yes, I mean, your point about wealthier women also is sort of giving up on the children. That's also interesting because they kind of put on this railroad, aren't they? Which is, so women have a different life story to men. women, let's call them girls at the earlier stages, their brains just develop faster. I think an 18-year-old boy is mentally equivalent to a 16-year-old girl. They just get that head start. For whatever reason, biology has programmed us that women just need that extra head start. So they do very well at school. They dominate at school. They do very well with university entrance. They sort of get into that. And then once you're there, you're kind of on this conveyor belt where, okay, you've done well at your A-levels. You've got into a good university. Now you're expected to go out and get an office job and sit in a cubicle. And that's, I mean, there was a time when young women would have been starting having children in their early 20s. But now, by the time you start to really hear the sort of biological clock ticking, you could easily be in your late 20s or 30s before this imperative really starts to manifest.
Yeah, this phenomenon of baby fever is very interesting. Like, it's kind of surprising that women ever want to have children, considering that in their 20s, it's sort of a far-off possibility. Like, I'd like to be a mother one day. Yeah. But it really does seem that once women start to feel that possibility is slipping away, then they kind of grasp onto it at, you know, just in those years where it starts to feel scarce. Like, I better do this now. Mm. But I want to pick up on what you said about having children being expensive. And there's a sense in it, yes, they are. I mean, we're going to go into the statistics of that in this episode. But I'd argue that the real cost is opportunity cost. So what you have now is women who are well-educated. Many of them have degrees. More than half of women who are, you know, in their teen years, early 20s, mm-hmm. are now in higher education. They're going out to get a degree with an eye to presumably getting some kind of middle-class job that requires a degree. They're not getting these degrees to be a barista or to go into Tesco, although many of them do.
Not intentionally anyway.
Yes, that is part of it. But the point is that if you have a full-time job, and many women do have a full-time job before they have their first child, then it's a massive opportunity cost to, you basically can't work more than a few hours a week if you have an infant. And as the child grows, it's very dependent on age, which is why I wanted to break it down by, you know, in a table the way that I have for this segment. But as the child grows, that you become more able to go back to work if you want to.
Yeah.
Or you could go to the trad wife route of life where you just keep having more. So once your smallest infant grows enough that they don't need you quite so intensely, just have another one. You know, if there's no opportunity cost, then stacking children this way, you know, they can share a bedroom that, you know, you can fit two in the back of your car. Like, it's actually, like, the second child is, like, once you're already out of work, much cheaper than the first
there's
child.
There's synergies, as we would say.
Is that a, yeah.
Okay. The management buzz speak. But yeah, I mean, but if you're a young woman coming through the corporate ladder, especially if you've got a good job, there's, you know, bonuses and promotions, and you're sort of put on that track. But the sort of track assumes that you want the same thing out of life as a man.
Yeah.
And we have a society where it's very, very naughty to suggest that women and men are different in any way.
Well, up to a certain age, I think men and women are pretty similar in the way they behave in the economy up to the point of motherhood or up to the point where women start to want motherhood.
Yes.
And perhaps start to prioritise different things. But I think this myth of women being very similar to men psychologically and in their behaviour, it does kind of make sense. Like, when you've got birth control, when you've got women with higher education, I'm not one of those people who think that, you know, women are really daft and silly. You know, we see a lot of stories of women being quite demanding in the workplace, saying, like, well, this is not... You know, this is not a very polite place to work. Like, this is actually quite difficult. I think that's kind of a minority of women, but a lot of women, they will enter the workplace and be quite effective, be quite competent at their jobs. A lot of them go to Tesco, you know, they work as a cashier in Tesco or in a, you know, they become a barista and they're quite good at that as well. But I think that up to a certain point, if you took children out of the picture, you probably could have economic units that were rather similar, male and female. But it is this childhood factor, this motherhood factor that really changes women.
Certainly professional firms really, really struggle to retain women in their early 30s. So, I mean, it's a nightmare for, you know, the law firms, for example, because they all sign up to these sort of diversity ideals about, yeah, we're going to have 50%, you know, female directors at sort of late stage. But they just, they cannot for love nor money hang on to their female associates or partners once they get into their 30s, because they just all kind of drop out and leave.
Well, think about this. What, pretend you're not a man and that you're a woman, right?
Right.
What is keeping you in a job? You want money. Yeah, you want the benefits. And it gives you a certain amount of social esteem to be, to have a job, whether you're a man or a woman. Like having, being a doctor or being a lawyer, like people think you're important. They think you're intelligent. But after a certain point, what is any of that worth if you don't have children? Like as a woman, I think there's something psychologically. It's also the sort of this social esteem, the respect of your peers. After you get past a certain age, those people who respected you when you were 25 and you were a lawyer are now looking at you and thinking, like, why are you not married?
Yes.
Like, is there something wrong with you? Like, why don't you want to have children?
Weird Harrodan, what are you doing just... Yes, stopping around by yourself.
And when your friends start to have children as well, I think that puts pressure on women to, they see how much that their friends are getting out of motherhood, and start to wonder, like, what is this life about? Like, am I on this planet to earn money? Is this really making me happy? Single women certainly. Like, what is the point of being a rich single woman if you're not married to a man who you love?
I love the way that Jordan Peterson framed it, which is, okay, you've got your career, but what are you going to do with the last 40 years of your life?
That too.
And it genuinely, it changes for men as well. When you're in your early 20s, you're all about your career and the next promotion and the big success, or in my case, closing a deal or something like that. And it's kind of consuming. But once you start going through your 30s, all of that stuff just seems to be less important. Your brain changes in ways that, I can't quite describe. But you start looking at the bigger picture, and you start looking at your life and who you are as a person and what's around you. And, me and the wife often say that our biggest mistake was not starting children earlier. But it's always this thing where we don't want to have them in rented.
Yeah.
We've got to get a house. So
that's the housing question. There is something psychologically different about renting compared to owning your place, where you really feel like I'm secure, and there's something kind of ineffable about. I think especially in women's psychology, that this is a place. I'm with a man who is secure. I'm in a place. I'm in a situation that is secure that makes her feel safe enough to say, "Let's have a baby."
But my point with this is that, because we got trapped in that mindset, we should have started 3 or 4 years earlier and had an extra 2 kids. Mm. And we often lament that we didn't do that earlier when we should. So, we've got this society that takes women and pushes them through this system and expects the same outcome as a man, but I don't think it serves them. In fact, I don't know any women of my age who are happy about the fact that they did an extra 2 years of career as opposed to 2 years of childcare and starting a bit earlier. And yes, you the biological realities kick in and your mind is kind of forced in that way eventually. But it would be really helpful if the social conditioning was not smoke screening that out for you, if it was more socially acceptable to go down that route a bit earlier.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's not so much that it's not socially acceptable. Like, it's not really a stigma around it so much as there's no social incentive to do it. It's not considered something that really intelligent, really high status women do. It's to have a child at 18, for instance, is very low class coded. If you don't know anything else about that person, then you probably think they're a chav or someone who's like very irresponsible. It's just to do that on purpose. It's not that people would think that was extremely weird, but that they're certainly not impressed by that. Like, that this is not something that people like be really proud of. Your parents are not going to be really proud of you for doing this.
It would have been entirely normal 100 years ago, though.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the thing is that if you, in a completely different social environment where a woman can be expected to start having children at 18, continue having children throughout all of her childbearing years. Mm. I mean, 18 is very early. We get into this discourse on Twitter a lot of like expecting, if you're talking about like prehistoric age, maybe, but talking like a few hundred years ago, women weren't not all women were married by 20. Mm. That was mid-20s, approximately, off the top of my head. Mm. Anyway, once you're on that path, you're a grandma by 40, by 50, and now that's your job. Just as you're entering menopause, like by some sort of crazy coincidence of biology, the age at which you're having your first grandchildren is the age where you're no longer able to have your own. And you, this is right. Basically, this is an entire life strategy. It's like, I'm going to have children, and then when my children grow up, I'm going to have grandchildren. And they need, like, before like modern conveniences and wealth, that grandmother was really, really important. We didn't have these like dads who change nappies, you know. We didn't have like the daddies around to help. Women needed their own mothers, their mother-in-laws, their aunts to help with the parenting. Mm. And this was a completely parallel strategy of life for women compared to what the men were doing, which is completely different. And women did have jobs as well, being your cottage industry, you know, working, what we now call working from home sounds very modern. But if you're textile industry, very associated with women. Mm. Brewing beer for a while was associated with women. And they would work, but they worked in different jobs to men. Mm. This isn't a history segment. All of the stats that I've collected.
No, it's interesting.
All of the stats I've collected for you are about 2024, like recent. This is average wages for women now. Mm-hmm. These are government programs, the government handouts. I've called them Gibbs in my spreadsheet, rather glibly. These are Gibbs that government are offering now this year.
So we're going to look at if you are a young woman today. And you embark down the child route, what are we going to look at? Are we going to look at the distinction between becoming a full-time mother or basically outsourcing the function? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, so I've made these two tables comparing, you know, what is your first 10 years of your child's life going to look like if you're at home versus if you're in the workplace? And yeah. This is, you can kind of visualise this not as two options. It's a false dichotomy.
Yes.
This is two ends of a spectrum of work-life balance. Okay. If committed entirely to a child versus having children. This isn't like the full-on wine aunt girl boss, right? These are cool wine aunt girl bosses who are reformed, who've settled down and they have a child. And now they've got to decide
But they can't bring themselves to properly give up the career, so yeah. They're going to try and fudge it somehow.
This is what I was getting up to. I forgot that the train of thought. But the point is that now relationships are so... we're in economic sort of recession. So for one thing, a lot of households need two incomes that she'll eventually need to go back to work just to pay the mortgage. Like, you can take a few years off if you've got some savings, if you've got, if you can live within your means. You can move to a cheaper area or something. If you can make sacrifices that mean you can do this for a few years, that's one thing. But to commit the rest of your life, like you've retired at age 35, that's quite something. That's a different financial reality.
Well, especially with today. I mean, it wasn't that. I mean, the whole Simpsons meme, where he's working in a power station, he's got a stay at home wife and a couple of children and holidays and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, actually going back, before we go onto your spreadsheet, going back to the family units that we used to have, I kind of feel that we're going to be forced back to something like that here, because the rest of the world have what you were describing, which was intact family units, where you get multiple generations, quite often three generations living together, and everybody kind of fitting in to do what they do best. And in the West, we have welfare systems and pensions. So, the old folk, they're not around anymore. You just chuck them out and then they get a pension and they basically live entirely separately. Children leave immediately and go off to become obedient tax serfs somewhere else.
Yeah, that's one factor of what I wanted to go into, is that the fact that women and men are now going to university at such high numbers means that, when you turn 18 or 19, you move across the country to a completely different city. You set some roots there. Your friends are there. Maybe you'll meet your significant other there, and you'll get a job there. And now you're based in a complete. You're in the city.
Or you go straight to London afterwards, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. People no longer stay in the place where their parents live, and this is something that contributes to childcare costs. Where a lot of grandparents, they'd like nothing more than to take care of their grandchildren for one, two, even 5 days a week while the mum's working.
Yeah, perhaps. But I mean, as you correctly point out, grandparents are getting much older. Grandparents are typically in their 60s or possibly 70s now, as opposed to their 40s. And that does make a substantial difference.
Mm.
So, and then, of course, the key thing we haven't mentioned yet is how do we square that circle through mass immigration?
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.